C-3PO?
Do you have a TARDIS in your studio?
If so, why are you showing this shit? Weren't you using the TARDIS?
Because no one wants to remember Ocean's 12 or Ocean's 13.
Well, that's true.
Well, do you?
I thought Ocean's 13 was supposed
I never
to be
good. Saw 13. I heard it was good.
Yeah. It's better than 12.
So okay. Is this live streaming?
No, God,
okay,
no.
Okay, all right.
Jesus.
Perfect.
Can you imagine?
Mo better. Mo better. Because that means that I have ample time to promote it for when it does go out.
Yes, it will go up probably...
Tomorrow.
No, probably
morning.
Wednesday.
Kidding.
That was like one of those things that I was like, I keep meaning to ask them. Oh, I keep meaning to pull my head out of my ass and do 14 other things, but I'm getting 4 hours of sleep a night. So you do what you can when you think about it.
What are you going to do to your hair when you keep end up putting your head in your ass? It's got to be like some hard work.
A shower cap.
Oh, there you go. I don't know why that didn't appear. See, you can tell I didn't use a shower cap.
Yeah. You don't have enough hair to worry about, though. You should just be able to, you know, brush it off. Me, it's more a little bit more of a production.
For most people, that would be insulting, but I've made my peace with it.
You're keeping it nice and short, man. I envy you. You're very aerodynamic.
And so when the light's too bright, I just look bald hair or not.
Nah.
Just shines right through.
That's okay. People mistake me for a stoplight if the sun's too bright, sir. If the sun's too bright, so...
Well, there you
causing
go.
Accidents here and there.
By the way, we're already recording.
Awesome.
So
fantastic.
That's what we do.
Yeah, you
love
go.
It.
It would have been funnier if I'd known.
But you usually talk so much anyway, we figured, screw it.
Yes, save it for the real show.
Well, this is the real show now. Mm. This is
God damn it.
Original Gentleman, episode...
Yeah.
I think it's 2021.
And just like we promised, every 2 weeks.
Well, okay, well, San Diego...
Well, back when we had fans, they used to count this shit for us. But now, that boat sailed.
Well, we still get the highest amount of hits of anything on the site. So,
oh,
yeah, back when we had fans, people used to count them.
So three people.
Three people know
two.
What number
yes,
we're on.
Well, this week we have a special surprise for you. We have got here the famous and geeky award nominee for best personality in the Geeky Awards, Dani Danger. She's actually going to Hollywood.
I'm going to Hollywood! I'm going to trip on the red carpet in front of a lot of important people, and apparently LeVar Burton's going to be there, and he's going to be right there when I trip, and
well,
that's how that's going to happen.
It's the Geeky Awards.
Yeah.
Pretty much everybody's going to trip.
Yeah, exactly, you know?
I think they give you, like, the Jennifer Lawrence shoes when you come in, and it's like...
That's good.
You're going to want to take a three count and then just tumble onto the stage.
Or maybe somebody, you know, maybe somebody, like, thinks it's really funny and likes to get a kick out of it, and they're going to just, like, put the red carpet on an incline, you know? Just let's see how many people we can roll into the award. Tuck and roll.
Make the carpet out of banana peels.
Yes.
Wow, now you're thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Banana peel carpet, the yellow carpet.
Yeah, I think the main thing I'd want to go for is if they have, like, the cast of The Big Bang Theory in dunking booths.
Do they?
I think everybody would love that.
Right? Oh, yeah, totally. That would be a lot of fun.
Like, we all hate the stupid fake geek girl discussion, right? We all agree that we hate that. But let's face it, that's a fake geek everyone show.
You know, it's so funny because people have asked me a lot about how I feel about that show, and we even talked a little bit about it because, like, on the one hand, you have to take it for what it is. Like,
sure.
It's network TV.
It's a sitcom.
Yeah, it's a sitcom.
It's gross exaggerations of real people.
Yes, there is nothing real about it. But at the same time, you also have to consider that, like, oh, people, there are people out there who think, oh, it's on TV, it must be real. You know, like...
Ugh.
Yeah,
but these are people who are living in flyover country, so it is real.
but you know, for the nerd community and people who are set apart from it and don't, I mean, I have a lot of family members who don't keep up with
sure.
the nerd thing. I'm the black sheep in my family. I'm the only person who does
well,
this.
Well, you know, I make computer games for a living, but I write them, and people think that means that I know how their computers work.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm like, no, Mom, I use Word and Excel, and I really don't know how those work all that well either.
I know how to do Word. What I'm supposed to do with those programs.
I know you click the thing that looks like a black box to make it not get lost.
I still remember someone coming up to me all excited because I said I'd help them with something with podcasting. I was like, okay, great. And they expected me to be an expert on Final Cut Pro.
Oh,
and so I was like, Okay, I do admittedly use Final Cut Pro for audio editing, which means I know how to do three things in Final Cut Pro. It's like totally overkill. It's killing an ant with a nuclear bomb using Final Cut Pro for podcasting.
But the ant is dead at the end of all that.
It is dead at the end.
Remember when we had to use Photoshop to make lolcats? Oh, those were the days.
God, I feel like it was a sign of the apocalypse when the internet is filled with make-your-own lolcat meme generators. You don't even need actual programming.
Hey, look, if you're walking around downtown, you need a bunch of ATMs. If you're hitting the internet, you need a bunch of fucking lolcat generators, okay? That's the métier of choice.
Hey, my girlfriend met Grumpy Cat, so I don't want to hear about it. And I met Lil Bub.
that's like making a good investment.
Yeah, that's my big celebrity moment.
So our theme today is cats?
Our theme today is Danny Danger.
And cats.
Nerdy cats.
Well, it always comes back to cats.
It always comes back to cats. We love the fur babies. The
internet is made out of an interconnected set of tubes and lots of cats.
That's actually what I imagine the internet to be, is that somewhere there's just a giant warehouse full of cats with glasses on, like the ones I'm wearing, with the tape in the middle, just typing on computers and talking to each other about deadlines, about when the new lolcats memes are going to hit. I mean, we have a quota to fill,
yes,
people.
And that place is called BuzzFeed.
Oh, wow. That's actually pretty
That's
accurate.
How they generate a listicle.
Oh,
you
my
just
God.
Take a finite number of cats and put it into a
Until
certain
I
amount
see
of space.
An actual human being that could in no way, shape, or form be cats in a human being costume, I am actually going to go with that's my theory for the staff at BuzzFeed.
If you look too hard into it, you'll end up waking up in a big white room with an old man cat. He's like, let me explain.
Yes, I've expected you for years.
I think it's been a giant
no
cat.
No one can use a cat opener here. We've been waiting you.
Everything that I do on the internet is leading me to this end.
To the cosmic can opener.
To the cosmic lolcat.
It is good that you have come, but first, did you bring any gushy foods?
And could you scratch me?
I always have gushy foods on my person. This is so convenient.
As it turned out, it's what I used for deodorant today. Anyway, tell us a little bit about your site, what you do. You're part of
WeirdGirls.com,
and that's Weird-Girls.com.
Yes. Weird-Girls.com. And there are me and a couple of other girls on the site. My producer, Mark, and my producer, the brains of the whole operation, puts it together. And we're all contributors. And I talk about comic books. I do pull lists. I do reviews. We talk about social issues that are happening in the comic book world. We talk about news. We talk about our favorite ships.
Can I come work for your site, even though I'm not a girl? Because you sound way more put together
Weird
than we are.
Girls is a gender-neutral term. It's sort of the same way I feel about dudes. I always resented the term dudette because that sounds so stupid.
It doesn't. It's like comedian.
It doesn't. Yeah, it just doesn't have the punch of dude.
Dudes. Yeah.
Dudes. Like, I'm a dude. I like to be a dude. I've even been a bro. Why can't these be gender neutral terms?
Seriously,
we can all
dude,
be weird
bro.
Girls.
Seriously, dude.
Yeah, dude, bro. Let's all be weird girls
yeah, when
together.
When I was in college, that was pretty standard. Back in the 90s, where it was like, you know, after a couple bottles of Captain Morgan's, everyone was a dude or
yes.
a bro, regardless of gender.
Everyone
Alcohol
is a dude.
Alcohol is the great equalizer.
Everyone is a actually everyone is a weirdling. Everyone is a weird girl. That's our. You know, our stance, but we've also got, like, we talk about cosplay. We have a girl who talks about the Disney Star Wars franchise. We're getting into tabletop games. We've got a girl who does young adult literature, and, you know, we're about to collab on some Harry Potter stuff. Like, Ooh. we're branching out as much as we can. Anything that's geeky that you love, we've got video games, cosplay, I mean, all of it.
Yeah. Who are the other two girls?
There's actually six of us now.
Oh, wow.
Six, seven? I don't know how many people are on. I don't know the official count on how many people are on Heroes of Awesome, which
yeah,
is
we
our
can't
tabletop.
Even keep one around. What's wrong with you, assholes?
We're trying to get more. They're always like, I'd love to do it. And then they're like, yeah, I can't do it.
It's a huge time commitment. And
yeah,
that's,
yes.
Especially with everything coming up with the Geeky Awards. Like, I joke around about only getting 4 hours of sleep, but I have a day job. So I really do, some nights, only get 4 hours of sleep because it's scripting, it's being, you know, being active. Communicating with people, setting things up, networking, you know.
And it's fun to do all those things.
It is
it's
fun.
It's just not profitable.
It is yeah. so fun.
No,
it really
you.
Is. It's fun. And if fun paid the bills, I would be a rich woman. I would have a very epic fort in my whole backyard would just be like the secret garden, and I would have a tree. I would live in a treehouse. It would be amazing. But fun does not pay the bills. So,
and you this also is a do a more love. Difficult take than just podcasting. You're organizing, editing video sequences that you're hosting. It's very professional looking.
Well, a lot of that is Mark. Mark is an incredible, he has a really great eye for filmmaking and directing and producing and putting things together. A lot of that is him, but you know, we, all of us girls do create our own content. We write and script everything that we do. The ideas come from us. You know, what we're talking about, what we decide to talk about, you know, the big events and how we decide to coordinate them with our show, all of that is us. So it's still a lot of work, although I can't take credit for how sleek and professional and just good everything looks, because that's Mark. He's incredible.
So which of the girls does Mark have a crush on?
Mm-hmm. Oh.
His wife.
No, he said a crush on.
Yeah.
No,
why are you putting her in a corner like that?
It's a simple question. This shouldn't be a corner.
I think I have found out how we can motivate Martin to be more professional in his dealings with one of us.
Well, it's a question that kind of shoots past the point of what we're doing, because it's not about any of that. It's about promoting women in a sense of just promoting a different, unique perspective on, you know, something that for
people
years
liking
has been
the things
thought,
that they love.
Yeah, and for years it's been thought that every comic book guy in the whole wide world is Kevin Smith.
Right.
And that's not fair to dudes either. Like, you don't all look alike.
It's
you
true.
Don't all like the same things. You don't, you know, there's a lot of diversity in the comic book community already. And, you know, women may be the largest growing demographic in comics right now,
yeah,
but all demographics are growing, and more different people are getting into the community. The geekosphere is just, you know, blowing up right now.
Why do you think that is?
Well, I think a big part of it is because of movies and television shows. It is, and people are getting real bitter about how it's becoming cool to be a geek. And it's like,
wait.
So you mean to tell me that you're upset because it's becoming cool to like what you like?
Yeah, that's one of the reasons I kind of backlash against the whole hate on for Big Bang Theory. And I completely understand people's reasons for not liking it. You know, it's a sophomoric sitcom. It's gross exaggeration. But the ownership that people take of this stuff, like, right. It's like, this is the culture I come from that I was born in. It's like, no, it isn't. Your parents took you to see Star Wars in 1978, and you bought a lot of toys, and that's what you love. And that's great, but you don't own that.
Yeah, you don't get
at
it.
All.
It's not like you have a geek Kwanzaa.
Yeah, you are not the gatekeeper.
Yeah.
A geek Kwanzaa.
Well,
there's Halloween, but yeah.
Well, and there have been times in all of our lives where we were sitting there playing with our action figures, or like, you know, just sitting there watching Ninja Turtles in our living room with my Michelangelo, you know, body pillow by myself with no friends around, really wishing that there was somebody else who was like me who was into it. And while your whole life may not be that, while you may be very fortunate and you may live in some sort of all geek commune, God bless you. Yeah, lucky you. Tell me where it is. But we've all felt.
It's the video game studio that I work for. to tell you the truth.
So, but it's, you know, we've all felt that feeling of I'm completely alone in the universe. What is so wrong with the idea that you're not? You know, what is so wrong with the idea that there are more people who are getting into what you're into?
I don't. Yeah, it's just like, you know, hey, I'm sorry you got a lot of wedgies for playing D&D. I'm glad I can play D&D without getting a wedgie anymore. That's
yes.
Awesome.
And that is one of the great things about being a grown-up.
Yeah. The downside of, like, for me, which was being this extroverted geek who was very into my geek stuff, wore my flag proudly, you know, not afraid of it, didn't care, and I didn't get picked on because I was like, whatever, man, it's awesome. They're like, oh, that guy's not intimidated by us. But the downside is there was a point where, like, really attractive woman would think I was cool because I wasn't afraid to let my geek flag fly. And I wasn't a really good-looking guy, but I could go way outside my league. And now, like, you go to Comic-Con, and there are dudes who look like Vin Diesel walking around with huge geeks. And I'm like, oh, my time is up.
Well,
It was a good run.
It was a good run. Yeah, it was a good run.
Look, all this, I will say one thing. All this shit has completely ruined the fedora. Let's be honest.
Yes, that's true.
Right.
Yeah.
That is right. Geeks, if you say they ruined one thing, they took the fedora away from
yes,
it.
Yes, so. You made it fedorable, you assholes.
But I love the fedora.
There's still one. So,
oh, let's see. Yeah,
there's
that's
still
true.
One.
There's,
so,
there's still
I know, yes. I had literally just bought like a $90 awesome.
Yeah, I know. And then it was just like, when OkCupid, their fedoras of OkCupid came out, and you're like, God, you ruined it, you assholes.
So, tell us, what is the Geeky Awards, per se?
So, the Geeky Awards is an award ceremony that is held to celebrate indie geek culture. So there's like, they have artists, they have a comic book category, they've got like best internet personality, they've got best blog, things like that. And, you know, I've been rifling around the site and looking at all the different nominees, and the Geeky Awards judges, maybe myself excluded, have really great taste, like really great taste in people. Like, just the art page alone, I spent an hour just being like, where do they find these people? Oh my God. it's a really cool little thing. It's looking into, you know, past nominees, past winners, you know, and past attendees, you know, I feel it's a really cool thing. It's a really cool gig, and I had never heard of it before this. And I think that was sort of a disservice done to me. I should have heard of it before this, because everybody should know about it. It seems like a lot of fun.
So it's not an awards where you submit yourself, like they find you and say like...
No. It is, you do submit, like, I did not submit myself, but Weird Girls is a channel we always submit.
Yeah.
We submitted last year as well. And I think. And so... It is submitted, but I didn't. It's just one of those things that I think Mark does, you know, in the background. He handles a lot of that publicity stuff. And unless we hear about it, it's not something that I'm aware of. So it's like, Geeky Awards. What is this? This sounds fun. Is this like someone gives me a certificate or I'm thinking like fifth grade, you know, when I got the Shakespeare Award, there's like an assembly and everybody sits cross-legged on the floor and, you know, I walk across
the
stage.
You seem to be implying it's not like that.
No. There are tables and chairs. It's a very swanky setup. It's tables and chairs and everything.
There's roast beef.
Yeah. No, well, apparently the after party is catered, is going to be a Pizza Hut, which is really exciting to me because...
you know what? It's what most people eat when they're playing D&D.
Well, you know, I'm in a very Ninja Turtles place right now, because like we filmed a review tonight for the upcoming movie.
Oh, you saw it already?
I haven't seen the movie. We just filmed a review of the currently running Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles series, which I'm obsessed with. And so I've had Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles on the brain. And so I've taken out all of the junk food in my diet and have replaced it with some really healthy stuff because I'm about to go out to California and I have this amazing, you know, poison ivy dress. And then I'm, you know, next month I'm doing a hot girl cosplay. And so I just really want to be in shape. Yeah. And so I was like, you know, I'm going to cut out my junk food. So I've been really lusting over pizza. And Mark was like, the after party, Pizza Hut. Ha ha. Isn't that hilarious? And I'm like, I'm going to eat so much pizza. And just like, there are going to be so many cowabunga jokes made. I'm going to eat all the pizza. It's going to be so awesome. I can't wait for this award show.
So when the show's all over, do y'all just go team up and do the Warriors against the Nerdy Awards going on down the street?
The Nerdy Awards?
Yeah, it was the Geeky Awards versus the Nerdy Awards. And then y'all both agree to disagree and go and take out the Spazzy Awards.
No, I love the Spazzy Awards. Spazzy Awards are my roots, man.
And no one even cares about the Dorky Awards.
No, whatever. Man.
So, Danny, have you checked out your competition for the...
I have. There are a lot of really... So the great thing is... the really cool thing about being an internet blogger or being in the internet community, and particularly with YouTube, is if there's somebody out there who's doing something similar to what you are doing, it actually is really good for you because, you know, each episode or whatever being about 5 minutes or 15 minutes or whatever most people, you know, film time wise, you know, you get to 15 minutes, you've watched your update and you want to watch more. And that's just sort of how YouTube works. And so there are a lot of people out there who do things that are similar to what I do, who are incredibly talented and I love to death and can't wait to collaborate with. And so this is just like, I'm basically being handed an opportunity to just meet and schmooze with the best of the best who do very close to what I do.
Yeah.
And so, you know, like I've been just sort of rifling through videos, and I haven't watched as much of everyone's videos as I would like to. That is a thing that I'm going to do in a couple of days. Actually, I finally have a day off. So I was like, we're going to get in our pajamas. We're going to get some popcorn and we're going to watch all these videos. So, but what I have seen, everyone is really good and I'm super excited to meet them. And we're crowdfunding my trip. And we just made our goal today for, our goal was like our minimum was to get my basically travel and place to stay paid for. And we made our goal today.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. I'm so excited.
I was about to promote it, but now you made your goal.
No, keep promoting it because I'm still paying for business cards out of pocket. I still had to pay for headshots out of pocket.
Look, you said they're going to give you pizza. Just stop.
Yeah, there is pizza, to be fair. I will be compensated in pizza and I will eat my way in pizza. But when I started my GoFundMe, you know, two of the other people who were in for Best Personality were like really into retweeting it and being like, every nominee deserves to go. We really want to meet this person. So everybody has been super helpful. It's just such a hand up type of community. Like if somebody is doing better than you, they want to put their hand down and help you up. And we should totally hook up
with this community.
I'm telling so positive. I think the whole geek community should be that way. And I like that the YouTube geek community really fosters that. They're a great shining example of what the geek community should be like.
So we're sort of the outcast of outcasts.
That's only because we've been doing this so long.
I think Danny's going to give us all wedgies.
It's like,
she hasn't gotten to that point yet.
Atomic wedgie.
You've been doing it for long enough that everybody turns on each other. She hasn't gotten there
those
yet.
Guys.
That'll happen. Don't worry.
Awesome.
That's funny.
No, it probably won't happen to you, and then we'll all be like bitter old guys.
Yeah.
It's not fair.
What did she do different? Well, you're also going to be dressing up for the awards.
Yes, I am.
I know you enjoy cosplay because the first time I ever met you, you were wearing a super heroine shirt. Or clothing as the Austin Books girl.
Yes. Sidekick girl. I'm actually not sidekick girl. I have loved ones that I need to protect. So if I were sidekick girl, I would never tell anyone. But that costume is, this outfit will be almost more comfortable than the sidekick girl costume. But no, I'm doing, for the red carpet, I went with a Poison Ivy theme. So I'm really excited.
Can get a little uncomfortable. I know Adrienne Curry dressed as Poison Ivy for San Diego Comic-Con. Oh. She was like, my ass looks like a war zone with all the foliage I had stacked to it.
I have cosplayed Poison Ivy, so I am there with her. Like, it's very comfortable, or very uncomfortable. But this is actually, because there are cosplayers who come to the Geeky Awards, but they're usually nominated as cosplayers, or like they're there as cosplayers.
Sure.
I am going for just like a, you know, it's a dress, it's a red carpet look, but it is themed like Poison Ivy.
Ah, so okay.
My thing, okay, so to give you a vision, where I came from with this was I was like, okay, well, what would Darwin Cook's Pamela Isley wear to an awards ceremony?
So he's never done that.
Huh?
He's never done.
He did. So the only thing I've ever seen him draw a Poison Ivy in wearing anything other than her like Poison Ivy outfit, where she's wearing like a dress or something, was in the there was a Batman Spirit crossover.
Oh yeah, I got that.
I remember that.
Yes, and there's just a brief panel before she. I think this is just a brief couple of panels before she goes into full Poison Ivy mode and looks like Poison Ivy. Where she's wearing a dress. I think it's been a couple years since I read it, but you know, sort of my inspiration was if Darwin Cook were to draw Poison Ivy in, you know, at a
Gotham
gala
slinky, yes.
Or something like that, this is what she would wear. And so I hooked up with several different people on Etsy, the little
green dress.
Yes, exactly. And my shoes, this is going to sound totally dorky, but I swear to God, they're beautiful. They look like roses. They have like petals coming up the back. And I hooked up with a lot of really great Etsy and small business, you know, creators and people who make accessories, and really just pulled out all the stops to create. I have
So what are you wearing? Etsy.
I'm wearing Etsy, yes!
And a hot glue gun.
I'm wearing small business, which more people should do.
It's funny. I keep looking at you have a tendonitis and you have a thing on your wrist.
Oh, yeah.
But the way it looks, like Batman's gauntlets.
I know, right?
The straps are sticking out.
Yeah.
It looks like,
I thought I'd spark my Kevlar.
Yeah, yeah. That's the first thing I thought when I looked in the mirror and saw it.
Spark my Kevlar.
You know, I would think, like, with the red hair, that gives you lots of room to play superheroines.
It does.
Because they're all either, their hair is either blue or red, pretty much everyone.
Yes. Well, it's a lot of, it's funny because a lot of my favorite characters are some of the most memorable cosplay characters to me have red hair, and it's really nice because I have such thick hair I can't get it under a wig and be comfortable. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we are in the midst of working on a really funny video project where I might get the opportunity to dress up as the new Batgirl costume, which is nice. So fantastic, and I'm so excited for. And if anybody knows anywhere where I can find those yellow Doc Martens, I will.
It does seem like the new costume is made for cosplayers, hey, it's put together out of stuff you can buy in the store.
Well, so here's the thing, and there's this. I absolutely love and adore and worship Jamie McKelvey because his redesign on Carol Danvers, Captain Marvel's costume, has really influenced the way we're drawing new female superheroes. Yeah. Like, Young Avengers was one of the most, like, fashion-forward, fresh, just, like, updated looks that and there's this attitude, and he didn't do the new Batgirl, just
I,
we're all
I gotta say,
it's changed the fashion of superhero.
I think so too, but on the other hand, I do gotta do a shout out, and I can't remember the artist for the life of me, but Chuck Dixon did a Robin Year One and Batgirl Year One. Batgirl Year One costume was very similar to this guy because there were combat boots, and you know, she very much DIY her own costume.
Yeah.
There was a, you know, and this is more like the kind of a souped up version of that, definitely. But that was one of the first things I thought of when I saw it. And I love the costume.
Yeah. Well, it's just like there's a lot more, like, there's a lot more seam work. There's a lot more zippers. Like,
there's
just
less boob.
Absolutely. And it just looks like something that actually exists.
Right.
Well, like, it was like when they did the new and current Catwoman costume. It was such a departure from the old, everything was purple before.
Yeah.
Right.
And then suddenly, it's all black leather. And it looks like it came out of a fetish shop, but it does look like, hey, you could actually buy that.
But the Darwin Cook version definitely got with the big
goggles. Yeah, the clunky boots.
Well, you know, John Favreau's
Darwin Cook can do no wrong.
I agree.
Well, that's true, too.
Wrong. Yeah, if I ever did Green Lantern, it would definitely be like, give me the Darwin Cook trunk action instead of how you doing spandex look.
He and it's so funny because when he and Bruce Timm worked together on New Frontier, the animated New Frontier, I just about died. Because,
which is
like,
so great.
Bruce Timm's artwork has been so influential in my life. I mean, I was watching Bruce Timm's animation before I even knew I was into superheroes.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
I grew up on that stuff, and then, you know, Darwin Cook's, I got into Darwin Cook's work once I was into comics, and that sort of, like, meshed for me, and I just really, I can't even talk about how much I love his art so much. I'm getting
Yeah, no, I'm on the same page. I've often said, like, if I could, you know, if my psychic power could be to make myself forget shit, I would make myself forget Batman Animated Series, Superman Animated Series, and all the Justice League just so I could go back and watch
them
all again for the first time.
Oh my god, I feel that way about Young Justice.
Oh yeah, no, they're great because, like, you can watch them as a little kid and just get enthralled with them, but if you're a long-time DC reader, you're just like, oh my god, Easter egg, Easter egg, Easter egg, Easter egg, Easter egg.
Really? Yeah, and you go back and you watch them, and even as an evolving comic book fan, like, I go back and I watch them. My roommate actually jokes around about how he has nightmares about the Batman feeling, like, duh. Like, he dreams that tune because I watch it so often.
Yeah.
And I'm obsessed.
So, your husband, does he like the same stuff that you do?
Yes. So well, some of it. He's not really into the superhero comics and stuff. He's into, he really likes, like, Transmetropolitan, Preacher. A little bit of Preacher. He wasn't so much into Preacher. He's real fickle about what he likes. He's not really a comic man? Book guy. Loves Why the Last Man. That was the first thing I actually got him to read. That's how I turned him on to comics. He hadn't read comics since he was really young.
That's a good story.
When we got
for
together.
People.
Yeah.
Anything by Brian K. Vaughan is a good
story.
Yeah, pretty much.
And, you know, he enjoyed The Walking Dead and now it's one of our, you know, beautiful bonding moments where we both sit there and watch The Walking Dead and like bitch about how it's not the same as the show. Which, you know,
are you guys both doing Saga?
I'm doing Saga, he's not.
Oh.
He's not really. It's so funny because like every once in a while you have those like fake geek girl moments where someone will ask me like, "Oh, well, you must like comics because your husband got you into them," and I'm like, "Nope." There's a cartoon limit in our house. Like after a certain point, he's like, "I can't do anything animated anymore. You've hit your quota for the month. We have to move on."
I can't process those words. Like, okay, a limit on animation.
I know.
I like watching animation a lot too, but I'm with our husband on this one. There's that point I'm like, I have to watch something that was nominated.
I need
for
to
an
see
Oscar.
Some real people.
I need to watch something that's black and white.
And I could just watch cartoons all the
time. If I was told that's all you get to watch from now on, I'd be like, right on.
If I was trapped on an island with a DVD player and Avatar The Last Airbender, I would be okay for the rest of my life. Just on loop.
I'm not gonna lie. I'm pretty much there.
Yeah.
Well, hey, I'm the odd man out.
Yes, you are.
Hey, that makes me the nerd. Awesome. I'm gonna go play sports. No, I'm not.
Not even
not
in an
even
alternate
close.
Universe.
That sounds horrible. Why does anyone even do that?
I'm gonna go watch some French New Wave movies.
Well,
and then it's wedgies for everyone.
For the record, you mentioned earlier you're still the funding site. It's GoFundMe.com is where they can find you on
yes.
there. As well, you are Weird Girls is adding new contributors, which means they're taking auditions for new people who want to do stuff.
It's one of those things. It's actually funny because it's the same as Austin Books and Comics hiring policy. We are always accepting applications.
But never
hired. However, everyone wants to be here. Like, and it's not that they're never hiring, but it's one of those things where, like...
It sucks because there's nothing new. You can't go into Awesome Books and go like, yeah, but I read a lot of comic books.
But they are more likely to hire people who come into the shop a lot, whose face they know. Like, because, you know, it's one of those things, like, if you're in there talking about... If you're in there every Wednesday, you're buying your comics, you're talking to them about what you're reading, and you're talking to the person behind the front desk or whatever. You know, as soon as they start thinking and they're going through this, like, giant person-sized stack of resumes, most of which are, like, folded and crumpled up because the person, like, put them... I mean, I've seen people, like... unfold paper airplanes and hand them in as a resume.
Pulling
like,
bubble gum. Apart
like, so this giant stack of resumes is like up to the ceiling, and you know Brandon's like, oh, he could go through that, but you know if you're there all the time, you know you're talking a lot, you're really interactive. You know it doesn't matter how much you know about comics, and that's the same with Weird Girls. You know it doesn't necessarily matter like how much you know. It's the personality. It's you know,
is there a connection?
Do you love what you love? How much do you love it? Show us.
Yeah, I mean I imagine it also has to be somebody who can naturally speak on the mic. Like we've been. Podcasting for nearly two decades, like back before it was even called podcasting.
Yeah, there was no word.
Like broadcasting.
There was no word called podcasting when we started.
And we've worked with several people.
Yes.
And some who...
Several is an understatement.
Yes. and some who like really got it.
Yeah, who were like immediately...
But I would say like a small handful who really got it.
Holy God, are you saying that this is like the crucible? That this is what we've been boiled down into? Is just you three?
It's
us
funny,
three?
It's funny how many people that who in real life are like, oh my God, they'd be so good on
mic. Oh, yeah.
And then you put them on mic, and it's just like
it's Michigan J. Frog.
Michigan J. Frog. Yeah, exactly.
Everybody does Michigan rag. Wait a minute. You want me to what?
Film is even more difficult, and especially when you're dealing with girls, and I can speak to personal experience for this. Like, when I first got in front of the camera, and, like, keep in mind, like, I was a theater kid. I did theater. I've been on stage. I've been in front of people. I'm not shy about performing. I love all of the attentions that belong to me. Give them to me now, but getting on camera, you don't think about, it can be so nerve-wracking, and I've told so many girls, like, they've asked me for advice. You know, we did a panel at RTX, and, you know, one of the questions was about basically being more comfortable on camera, And it's like, you just have to let go. There's no way around it. You just have to get over it. Like, nobody care. Yeah. Yes, your face looks a little more round from that side. Is it really that big a deal? You know what? You're making a funny face, and you're making a funny face while you're talking about something that you love and enjoy. Just tell them that,
in real life, you look too skinny, so the camera adding 5 pounds actually helps you out a lot.
Well, no, I mean, it's not even about, like, because I think we all worry about, like, how we look or how we sound or making mistakes. And the great thing about YouTube, some of the best YouTube videos that I've ever seen, people, like, make mistakes, like, and it's really funny, and then you get to see their, like, natural candid reaction to, like, oh, I just effed up and I'm on camera.
That's why I love Jackie Chan really movies.
You know, it's not, and there's also, like, that fear that, and I don't know if the fear comes later once it starts happening, you have to be on camera for a little while, but there is that fear that people are going to start criticizing your appearance, and that takes a lot of strength too. Sure. It does happen when someone's like, you know, oh, you're too fat to wear that, or you are, you know, you need to, somebody told me once I needed to condition my hair.
Seriously?
Awesome.
For real.
Ultra specific thing.
For real, right?
Like, what are you, like, Vidal Sassoon? Shut the fuck up.
Yeah, you go to hell. My locks are silky soft.
It takes some developing a second, third, and fourth rhino skin.
You really do.
Dealing with the internet, because
you got to put a
because
filter.
You get a lot of people. You got a lot of people who are really sweet.
Yes.
And then there's the others who have this unimaginable sense of entitlement and just want to sit and judge everything.
I got out of bed today, so I deserve to tell you what I think about your appearance.
Yes. Yeah, hiding behind your keyboard, as they say.
What?
You know, fear is the vlog killer, no question.
Yeah.
It's, you know, I've seen so many people who were at first great until they got criticism, and then they just...
You have to ride with the fear, man. You got to ride with the fear.
You just got to push right through.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny, I found that, like, and I looked at this at Will, first being on camera. The hardest thing is just the tendency is to not stare in the lens as if it was a person you were talking to and making eye contact, because you can tell, like I did it at first, your eyes just dart away a lot and you're just like, what am I doing? This is weird. Staring into the camera. You just got to pretend you're talking to somebody that you know and like.
Yeah. I always like to
or hate. It.
Or hate, yeah.
That's what works for me.
Exactly. But that's true for you and everyone. So
what's made it easier for me is actually thinking about talking to a customer at Austin Books. Because one of my favorite things to do when I work at Austin Books is, like, you get and this happens less commonly than it used to, which makes me so proud in my heart. But every once in a while you'll have a couple walk in. The guy's obviously very into being there, and the girl's walking around like she has no interest in where she is. She's like, oh, this is just like running errands. And so, you know, I imagine,
or vice versa.
Yeah, I imagine. Yeah, and it can go the flip-flop way around too, but it used to happen more commonly, you know, with the boyfriend being interested in the girlfriend. Not now. Sure. I've actually seen it happen quite a few times where it's the other way around, and oh my god, it's just so cute, I could choke.
Times they are changing.
I know, I love it, but it's, you know, starting a conversation with that person who doesn't think that they're into comics. Like, telling me you're not into comics is like telling me you're not into books. What the hell you mean you're not into books? There's a comic book out there for you. There's a book out there for you. What do you mean? You don't? Where are you from? You don't like reading. Where are you from? You don't like words. Where are you from? You don't like art. You know?
Yeah.
So it's...
Remember when I was talking about those people that watch The Big Bang Theory and really like them?
So, no, it's... But it's like, it's... You know, you start a conversation with that person, you know, and just...
No, that's definitely...
And imagining yourself doing that on camera, and instead of talking to a camera, you're talking to a person who is a blank slate and who's open to whatever it is that you're saying, but has no idea what you're talking about, and you just go from there.
That's the most enriching thing about doing this is, you know, whether it be, you know, on the comic book podcast or this or what have you, is when you get somebody that comes back to you and be like, oh man, remember that, you know... That episode you did that you got really drunk on and talked about Batman. Well, you also talked about this you know, weird esoteric indie series that I got into, and now it's the best thing that I've ever read, and I love it.
Oh man, those moments where people go, yeah. You know what? I used to be a guy who only knew about Batman.
Yeah.
And now here it is 3 years later, and I have all this stuff. And yeah. I've gotten so many. I met my fiance.
Yeah.
Because of our connection with the stuff you guys turned me on to.
If I made one person read the entire run of Love and Rockets, my job has been done.
We get comments, and they become more frequent of, you know, this was the first time I've ever read it. We did an episode that was comic books to recruit new readers.
Oh.
And it was like, Why the Last Man, Fables, Persepolis. Marvelous, The Walking Dead, and you know, you can knock The Walking Dead one way or the other, but it doesn't change the fact that it's one of the most largely media-recognized comic books. If you want to get somebody into comic books,
that's a good start.
I mean, it's a giant door.
I had I think we did an episode like that at one point, specifically with episodes of Doctor Who, about which of the ones that get people started.
Gateway drug.
Gateway Who stuff.
Yeah, and you know, we get comments that are like, you know, I've wanted to get into comic books for a while, but I didn't know what to pick up. This is so helpful. You know, I've wanted to do this for a while. I've wanted to do this. This is the first comic book I've ever read. Thank you. And it means so much to me that, because I have so many friends that create comic books and they're struggling tooth and nail, and they have families and they have kids, you know, they've got kids that they're trying to put food on their table by making their own art. And it's a struggle every day, but they do it. They make that sacrifice for us because we, as the, you know, consumer of this art, they love what they do and they make that sacrifice for us. And so to see more people joining in our community and increasing the potential success for those people who are working so hard to make what they love and what we love is like,
Everybody wins. Anytime
somebody does the gatekeeping the geek community thing, I'm like, okay, well, why don't you just go find all of your starving artist friends and just punch them right in the face?
You're literally...
Just punch them right in the face. And don't explain why, just walk away.
That goes over. The one thing I'm known for talking shit about is My Little Pony.
I know.
My friend, our friend Matt Frank, who does Godzilla.
I love Matt!
Like, he loves My Little Pony. We always have a little fun at his expense. But then I listened to John DeLancey on The Nerdist, who played Q on Star Trek. And he's one of the voices on My Little Pony.
And he also made that plane wreck.
What?
On Breaking Bad.
On Breaking Bad, yes. And he was talking about, like, he took this job just like it's another job, didn't know what this was, whatever, and then suddenly he got 8 trillion emails in his inbox from, like, grown men and stuff, and he's, like, calls his agent going, what the fuck did you get me into? And then he's, like, saying, you know, the time went on, and he started to understand, and started to meet some of these people. He's like, these are not really freaky people, and, you know, there are people who are really connecting with this message of, like, all these basic human qualities of loyalty and honesty and trust and all these things, and he's like, honestly, this isn't that different in the sense of the morals that it's pushing than Star Trek The Next Generation was, and that it's way optimistic, and it's way serving, like, really good ideals for humankind. And I was like, and he funded it and is part of a documentary about bronies now.
Oh, that's right. It's playing on demand.
I mean,
I was like, I just felt bad. I was like, man, I've been talking shit about this for so long, and now I've got to go, okay, it may still not be my thing, but I kind of have to stop talking.
Yeah, I gotta say,
the croppers yet? Okay, but that's a different thing.
For someone who works with a lot of people that have small children, it's like My Little Pony and Adventure Time and all that stuff, it's just a saving grace for them, because they're like, oh, thank God, it's a cartoon that I can actually stand to watch, and I'm not being good, you know, I don't have to sit through Barney.
And you're right.
Well, fuck those people, because I had to sit through Barney. and things that made Barney look good.
Right.
There have always been subversive cartoons.
There shouldn't be people who are gatekeepers on saying, you know, oh, this stuff is huge in the geek community, but I've decided it's horrible, and I'm going to tell you all never to experience
it. Well, and
except for them making Spider-Man not be with Mary Jane anymore. Still going to stand by that as a horrible...
Do we have to reverse everything we said about Wolverine Origins now?
No.
No. There's still bad singular things, but we still like Wolverine.
Okay.
Wolverine's still good.
Well, enjoy that, because it's going to be short-lived.
Yeah, they're killing Wolverine,
God damn it,
aren't they?
Marvel.
For 5 minutes?
Yeah, you know,
in the Ultimate Universe. They're not going to keep him dead in 616.
I really appreciate that, like, this is sort of like, was it Eric Stevenson from Image who gave this big speech at the Comics Expo?
Yeah, that was kind of a dickish speech in a way.
But he's right, in a way, because, like...
I'm sorry.
Okay.
I gotta say,
they kill somebody anymore.
I agree.
Even
it has gotten egregious. However, how long have these comic books been around? And, you know, as a writer, there's only so much you can do.
True.
And so sometimes you have to leap to you know, these things. And a lot of times they do things that we say, God, this is the stupidest fucking thing I've ever heard of. Like, bringing Bucky back to be Captain America. Oh, wait a second. This is really fucking good.
Yeah, well,
and I gotta say,
smack about that before it actually was written.
Oh, and, yeah.
You know, on behalf of the guy I have met and like quite a bit, the guy who is writing She-Hulk, which fucking rocks right now, Charles Soule, is the guy who's writing The Death of Wolverine. And I'm like, man, for everything you've done on She-Hulk,
I'm willing to look at the plot. It's just like when
it's gimmicky.
I almost feel like they should just not announce it. I almost feel like they should just let it be a surprise. Like there's this big thing, and there's nothing wrong with saying, like, there's a big life-changing event that's going to happen to Wolverine, but we're not going to tell you what it is.
You know,
saying they're going to die is very gimmicky.
But even announcing this is something to look forward to, I think, takes away so much of the impact. I feel like
it does.
Wouldn't be as cynical about it if it was just, hey, it happened.
It's not a gimmick if he just dies and it's a natural flow of the story.
After it happens,
yes.
For sure.
Yes.
You know?
Now, unfortunately,
we have to create events in order to drive, you know, that with Marvel and DC especially, they need to drive people to stuff because, you know, how many fucking times do you need to pick up a Wolverine comic?
And
this is what brings in, it brings in older readers who want to check out what's going on, and it brings in newer readers who are like, oh, wow, Wolverine, I've heard of him, they're going to kill him off. Yeah, it's you know, it's cheap and gimmicky, but so is Sweeps Weeks on TV. But you need to do Sweeps Weeks on TV.
Yeah, we all don't like the fact that it happens, but it's proven to be financially lucrative as well.
That's where it is. That's where it is for me. I understand the financial lucrative side of it, and I do, and these people need to make money, and they are a business first and foremost, so you have to respect that. But at the same time, you know, being such a huge fan of She-Hulk, I would really like for Charles to have the chance to have just rolled that out, without us on, because we already know how it's gonna end.
I absolutely, you know, there is. I was reading something just a little while ago where somebody was saying, like, you know, if you were a reader of Spider-Man in the early 70s and you picked up, you know, issue 122 of Amazing Spider-Man, and at the very end, Gwen Stacy dies, and they tell you the title, The Night Gwen Stacy Died. It's just like, that was my Kennedy getting shot. That was my Challenger exploding. I remember exactly, I walked around for like a day going like, what am I going to do? Gwen's dead. I love Gwen. She was my surrogate girlfriend. And, you know, yeah, you're probably not going to get that in mainstream comics again.
Yes,
but that's okay, because they have plenty of other things like The Walking Dead that can, you know, just completely rip your heart out.
Yeah, and I guess that is true. You have to, with the major companies, you do have to consider, you know, what you have to consider the content and who they're, you know, the audience that
who they're trying to bring in.
I mean,
who they're trying to keep.
I guess I see it.
Spoiled by big comics in the indie world now, the stuff that Image does that doesn't, you know, they don't publish a huge 3 months ahead of time coming up on Sex Criminals. One of the main characters can't get it up.
Right.
You can't miss this.
That all that being said, though. Really? Killing Wolverine? Come on, guys.
Everybody got up in arms about, Dr. Octopus has taken over Peter Parker's body.
Oh, but I loved that.
Well, there was love and there was hate for it. But you know what I'm
saying? It wrapped up really well.
Well, like now, Peter Parker's back.
It wrapped up really well, and I've actually been enjoying it since then.
Yeah. I liked it a lot. I think it developed Ock's character a lot, actually. Which is very interesting because you don't really get to see, you don't usually get to see the evolution of a character, of a bad guy character,
right,
in a sense that you start to feel for them or relate to them. That's not normally an approach that we do with our classic villains.
He's still Doc Ock. He's still kind of a sociopath.
Wait, so is he not dead? Like, if Peter Parker's back in his own body?
They've insinuated now that he's still out there somewhere.
He's still out there. Nobody dies.
I don't know. He'll be back.
Like Gwen?
He's Doc Ock.
Sorry.
Exactly.
No, they came back. That poor girl, what they've done to her.
I mean, it's like, I always say, like, I love J. Michael Straczynski's run on Spider-Man so much. It's one of my favorite modern runs on Spider-Man. Until One More Day, and with the exception of the Gwen Stacy twins.
Right, right.
Even the comics have tried to go, like, yeah, I think he was just dreaming or
something. Even he himself has said, like, Yeah, that was a mistake. I'm sorry I ever did that.
I don't think they've ever mentioned it since.
Right,
like, we're like, nope, didn't happen. Gwen Stacy did not have twins with Norman Osborn.
No, I...
You know, I would actually really like to interview him, because there are some of his works, and he writes a lot of stuff, and some of it doesn't always, you know, resonate with me. But, like, everybody gave Superman Earth 1 a lot of grief, but I really feel like that was a really great interpretation of a Superman story in an alternate universe, and I really liked it. And there's a lot of things that he writes that are just, he'll twist this one thing about a superhero to make it more humane, and he does a really good job. I would actually really like to... Didn't he write that the Brave and Bold number 33, where Wonder Woman and Zatanna take Barbara Gordon out for a night dancing?
Might have, I'm not sure.
I think that was him. And Cliff Chang did the artwork.
Rising Stars is my favorite thing that he wrote, other than the best thing he ever wrote, which was Babylon 5. Sorry, I'm going to be that guy. Everyone's like, what's Babylon 5? Oh, back in the olden days, before sci-fi was allowed to have one long continuing story.
Back when CGI was awful.
Exactly. It was all done on a
Texas
Instruments.
They all made an entire 5-year-long series on a Commodore 64.
With Muppets.
All right, well, I got to...
No, that's Farscape.
I got to redirect here for a second, because we reached that time of the show that is the song of the week.
And yes!
This time, what?
It is... Yeah, we always...
Shouldn't the song
yes.
of the week...
We what song have you brought us?
No.
I can pick something on
Shouldn't
the
song be Happy Birthday to you?
Yeah, so because it's Bo's birthday.
It was.
Happy birthday!
Yesterday. Thank you.
It's, you know,
yesterday.
We're recording today. It's
now
your
birthday. Old.
Welcome to Elderly Retirement Geek Community.
One whole year's worth of wear.
Look, just put your teeth in and then tell us what your song is.
Well, since I've been seeing Guardians of the Galaxy so much lately, I've seen it twice, which for me is like seeing, you know, like when I saw Star Wars 7 times in the theater, because I don't do that shit anymore.
The movie is so Star Wars.
It's
Star Wars rewritten by comedy.
I hadn't seen the stinger.
That's not a spoiler.
Yeah, no spoilers.
Which is awesome, because Thanos and Blade team up and they beat the shit out of Joe Quesada. It's awesome. I haven't seen the stinger.
It just came a little.
Oh, you still? You haven't seen it twice. You haven't seen it.
I know. I finally saw the stinger.
Okay, because I haven't seen it yet.
So,
but I've heard about
that. That being the case, like, you know, if you've unless you've been living under a rock, or you just purposely have not read any reviews of Guardians whatsoever, you'll note that one of the huge big stars of the whole thing is the soundtrack. And it's a bunch of early 70s hits.
It's a KTEL commercial.
It is a KTEL commercial. You expect midway through, like, you know, some space hippie to go like, hey, what's that tape you're playing there, Peter Quill? Well, turn it up!
It's surprising that he wasn't using an 8-track.
Like
the Sony, Budokan.
Yeah,
or
no, well, hey, man, it's a science fiction movie.
The space.
That's like high tech. These are the songs that his mother recorded for him when he was a kid, and like it's his little touchstone to still being from Earth. But they use it incredibly well. So many good songs, but... One of my favorites is back in the 70s, after the Beatles broke up, this thing called power pop happened, which was stuff like Big Star, and it was very melodic pop with guitar hooks, but no overblown solos and nothing heavy enough to be metal. It was just like good bubbly rock and roll. And one of the best guys for doing that was a guy named Eric Carmen, and his first band was called the Raspberries. And one of the songs they use in Guardians of the Galaxy is Go All the Way, and it's fucking awesome. So if you only just kind of got a glimpse of it in the movie, go ahead and kick back and listen to the whole song, because it's fucking...
Or at least part of the song.
Yeah. Or at least part of the song.
And then click on our Amazon link to buy the Guardians of the Galaxy soundtrack.
Absolutely.
It's actually a pretty goddamn good soundtrack.
It's a really goddamn good soundtrack.
But you know what? Let's stop this for a second and take a listen, and we'll be back to talk about some of Danny Danger's favorite comic books she's reading right now.
I'm couldn't say what I wanted to say. Just she whispered, I love you so.
You know what? I used to listen to this song in the 70s. I could have dated Peter Quill's mom. Is probably somebody I dated. But,
you could be.
Oh my God! And you're an alien. So,
but it wasn't until like a handful of years ago, like 3 or 4, that I realized they were saying "go all the way."
Yeah,
I thought they were saying "go away." Please go away.
Oh, that explains what went wrong with that one girlfriend.
Yes, there we go. That's what that was.
We're emailing her that.
Why can't I get this bitch off my jock?
But I was always like, I never knew who sang the song. And then I would just like see it on my satellite radio, the Raspberries. And I was like, oh, it's some one-hit wonder. It wasn't until looking at the credits of Guardians of the Galaxy, I was like, Eric Carmen?
Yeah.
Jesus, that's why the voice sounded so familiar.
I had never heard this before until you were like, I was going to be my pick of the week.
Oh my God.
Because I still haven't
You've never heard this song before?
No, not that I recall.
Wow.
Dude, it got heavy radio play. Yeah,
I listened to the whole thing and went, wow, this is a great song.
Yeah. It starts out with kind of that you know, hard, great guitar riff.
Yeah.
And then it's and now we're going to turn into the Beatles.
Right.
And now we're going to go back into the guitar. And the Beatles again, and more guitar.
Well, it's pretty cool. But you know what's also pretty cool? A lot of the comics you've recommended to us this week. I'm looking through it. There was some stuff I had sitting on my stack, and I was like, shit, I still haven't actually read this yet. So I spent like the day like pouring over these, going like, okay, I've been meaning to read Rat Queens for a while.
Me too. I almost bought like the collections last weekend, and I just didn't do it.
Alex and Ada. I was like, I've been trying to tell
you love her so much. I was like, you got to read Alex and
Girls.
Ada.
As well.
Girl, yeah.
Same, God same damn it.
Yeah.
And Luna. Yeah.
I bought Mouse Guard by mistake.
and that's just terrible.
I like Mouse Guard.
I'm kidding.
They're
mice.
Mouse Guard's so cute.
Mouse Guard's really good.
And they have swords.
Punches you right in the feels.
What's the other Mouse Guard-like comic? It's by...
Stuff of Legend?
Well, it's. I think it's...
Well, there's everything Brian Legend Jock ever wrote.
I think Michael Avon Oeming does the art for it.
And to be fair, Rat Queens doesn't actually feature
rats. Yeah, there's no rats.
So that's just the name of it.
No, there's another book that's like a... anyway, moving on.
Well, let's start with Rat Queens, because that
Are
was
you thinking
one
of Redwall?
So no. We did a review of Rat Queens #1 right after it came out, and I called it. I was really proud of this, because I still, as it goes on, I still kind of feel like I nailed it. It's sort of like Bridesmaids meets Lord of the Rings. I mean, did I nail it or did I nail it?
I wouldn't say necessarily Lord of the Rings, because it's like its connection to Dungeons and Dragons in particular.
Yeah.
Is like,
oh, so it's Dragonlance and Bridesmaids.
Yeah,
now you're talking.
It's Dragonlance and Bridesmaids, exactly. I mean, there's points where you're like, it's clear that they were looking at their like alignment pages and in their player's guide to decide what a character would do at points, and it's part of the comedy to me of this book.
Are you the Carrie or are you the Racelin?
I love the halflings. What are they called? Smidgens instead of halflings.
Smidgens.
Which I'm like, that's awesome.
There's so many little just like quotable moments and like all of the
smidgens,
characters. But I'm all of the characters just have their own really present personalities. There's no one in the comic that is just like forgettable. And that's some of the, you know, my favorite books are books where you see a character, you'll buy a t-shirt with some character on it that even in a comic book convention, like only like three other people will know because you love that character so much. And Rat Queens has a really great reception. So when you wear your Rat Queen shirt, like it's not three people, it's like three bazillion people stop you and tell you that they love your shirt. But I mean, out in the real world, when I wear my Rat Queen shirt, nobody knows what it is. They just know that like, there's this picture of an elf girl flipping the bird.
Rat and Queen made an album together.
Yes. Like, is that we're in Austin, so everybody's like, is that a Ben t-shirt, man?
Yeah.
Oh, I'd see them. Rat Queens. That sounds awesome.
Totally. Rat Queens. I'd go see them.
It reminds me, and I can't remember what it was called anymore, but in Dragon Magazine, there used to be a backup comic in the back of it.
Oh, I used to read that all the time.
There was a funny...
Phil Foglio did the art for it.
What's new with Phil?
What's new? That's it.
Yeah, exactly. That was really
how can you forget the name of that?
Well, because it's been a long time since I've read it. And it kind of reminds me of that same sense that it's like these really cool, memorable characters living in a D&D world, but this is with, like you said, kind of a Bridesmaids or even Tarantino-esque at points.
There's
definitely...
on these characters... And they're all, I mean, it's a very traditional party of all women in this case. Of like, you've got your cleric, which is a dark cleric, and you've got your magic user, and you've got your dwarf, which cracks me up because it's a...
Is that Melissa McCarthy?
Oh, she's
good
so
looking,
bad.
But she's like, she keeps getting bugged like by other dwarves. Why'd you shave your beard, you Uncle Tom?
It's rebellion! It's a sense of rebellion!
That's a Terry Pratt's joke, dude.
Yeah, and the halfling, and it's just like... And it's really...
Corporal Little Bottom, what's that on your lips? Lipstick, sir.
Well, and...
All right, then.
You have to... I'm in love with Betty. I think Betty is my spirit animal. she's the little... She's... For those of you who don't read Rat Queens, she is the little hobbit who is...
Oh, she's so adorable.
Yeah, she's like... She's just like... A drunken, mushroom-eating, candy-gnoming, like, just little hobbit, and she's...
Who's a little Sherlock Holmes as well.
Oh,
she's like a master thief, and, like, is, like, so good at it.
She always reminds me of that little kid in Talladega Nights. I'll climb up you like a spider monkey!
Yeah.
That's, I mean, there's just this moment where they launch her. Like, the Betty launch is, like, a thing. They launch her at bad guys all
the
time,
and she just...
Two daggers, climbs right up a back... You know, it's just great. It's wonderful.
Oh, dude, we do that with dwarves in AD&D all the fucking time.
I love it.
Throw the dwarf thief at him.
Yes.
He gets three attacks around. Just hurl him.
Right?
I found that, like, what I like about this is that they are all well-drawn characters. They all have this strong connection to each other while still sort of, like, giving each other shit type of thing. I mean, they're obviously all friends. And the town doesn't really like them, but there's not much they can do about it because they're pretty much badasses.
Yeah.
This little mercenary group there. And it's so irreverent and funny, and even the little bits at the end, like, coming next issue. Like, the last one I read just said, coming next issue. Fuck!
That's more or less every issue. Well, and one of the things that I really like, and I really want to shift and talk about the art in this book for a minute, because we're going, you know, we're talking about the new Batgirl costume, we're talking about McKelvey's take on different heroes, and I really, really love Rock Up Church. His design for these characters is so... it brings out the girly in me because there's like so many accessories. Like if you look at Hannah, you know, she's, you look at Hannah and she's got this rockabilly look to her, and each character has their own look, their own fashion, like, and it fits their personality. And it's just like, you know, when you're a girl and you're reading a comic and you see all these different girls in just these spandex costumes and you're thinking, where is Edna Mode?
Right.
Where is Edna Mode for the DCU? Like, where is Edna Mode for Marvel Comics? And Rat Queen's gonna have their own Edna Mode. It's Rock Up Church.
I think this is really one of those comics that most people don't know about yet.
Oh, yeah.
Of your average comic book reader who should really go out of their way to pick it up, because it's just one of those books you'll have no trouble jumping right in.
Yeah.
And it's so accessible and funny. I mean, it's one of those books I would say is even a good introductory comic.
Well, and I haven't read it yet, but a lot of folks who recommend Rat Queens have told me that Peter Panzerfaust is really great. Like
I've heard that.
You know, Curtis has a really good habit of just writing some very tongue-in-cheek stuff. But it's funny because I've started in the 2 years that I've done this, and being a Valkyrie, you know, which the Valkyries are a group of women who work in comic book shops. Mm-hmm. I have started, there's one thing I have learned about comics. If you want to determine the quality of a comic without actually having to open any of the pages or look at a preview, look at the fan base.
Yeah.
Rat Queens has an incredibly loyal fan base. Sex Criminals, incredibly loyal fan base. Saga, incredibly loyal fan base. And not just incredibly loyal, but some of the coolest some of the most educated, some of the most forward-thinking, some of the most artistically inclined, some of the most talented and
does
thoughtful.
Does Patton Oswalt like it?
If he doesn't, somebody hasn't sent him a copy.
That's all there is to it. Yeah.
I'll do that. I'll take one for the team. I will mail Patton Oswalt a copy of Rat Queens.
I need to check it out because I'm a big Terry Pratchett fan, and I love intelligent takes on the fantasy tropes, especially like, you know, D&D tropes.
It's so fresh.
And I love the fact, like, one of my favorite characters in Terry Pratchett's City Watch is Engwa, who's the City Watch werewolf, and, you know, her armor is, you know, oh, what kind of armor does she wear? She wears the same thing as all the other fucking guys. She's a cop. You know, it's just like, well done.
So moving on to another comic book that you recommended is Alex and Ada with a plus symbol for the
name. Oh, Alex and Ada.
And
so good.
This is the latest comic from Jonathan Luna of the Lunan Brothers. His other brother, I don't know what the other Luna brother is doing right now, but he's not involved in this. This is I forget her name, Rachel.
Are these guys that did the sword?
Yes. The sword and Girls, which were both, I thought, spectacular. It's
fantastic. So some of my favorite series of all time.
Sarah Vaughn, who's also done a book called Spark Shooter, she is the main writer on this. Luna is sort of also like sort of story. I think he's listed as story assistant
plot.
Or something weird like that.
Well, because the Luna brothers are really, I think they're used to, you know, doing the art and the story and just being really hands on and sort of involved in the whole process. So I just can't imagine that Jonathan Luna would be like, I think I'm just going to draw this stuff.
Right.
And I'm also going to have all of this creative input.
And yet this feels completely like a Luna brothers book.
It does.
I know.
Anyways.
Well, and, you know, one of my, I told somebody the other day, I was like, I can't tell you, the story is still so new that I can't put my finger on exactly why I love it. I feel like that's, I feel like sort of like why The Last Man, you get, you know, you're six issues in and you're like, I know I love this, but I can't tell you completely why. You know, it's one of those things, but there are so many cool implications to this story. Basically, if you don't know, Alex plus Ada is a story about a young man whose grandmother, as a gift, orders him an android, and these androids are just basically used for, you know, company. They're for lonely people. They're, you know, obviously people will probably use them for sex purposes.
They make those?
Yes.
In the future.
Only in the future.
Just give it 10 years.
Yeah.
But so this guy's grandmother orders him a Tanaka android, and there is a way to program sentience into your android, but it is illegal.
You have
because,
to jailbreak them like you do.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah,
and you know, because there have been violent incidences in the past, and there's so many interesting implications with this comic that are just barely being teased and touched on because you can't dive headfirst into these things. But like, you know, people's fear of something that they don't understand, our ability to create intelligent life and then shun it, like what that means about us, what that means about the intelligent life that we create. I mean, it's just...
As well as, I find one of the things the Luna brothers do that's most fascinating is taking a situation that in 10 years ago would have been the setup for a porn comic book and making something that actually explores real gender.
A highly intellectual conversation.
About it. Like, I mean, that's what
they
fascinated
never
me about.
Shy away from gender issues.
That's what fascinated me about the Girls series. Which was like, this is this book that everyone's waiting for it to be prurient, and that's not what that book is about.
I know.
At all.
I know.
I got so many sideways eyes reading that book at my other job. At my
me too.
Job. Like, and that didn't stop me. But yeah, I mean, it is. It's the Luna brothers, you know, Jonathan, the Luna brothers don't shy away from gender issues, and I really like that. They seem to dive headfirst, and I've only read Alex plus Ada and Girls.
You should read.
Oh, you should read the Sword.
I really want to read the Sword, and I read a trade in, and then had to put it down because I had a deadline on something.
No,
else.
The Sword, besides being just as good as these others, has just this chilling ending that just stuck with me. For so long.
Every time somebody tells me they like Under the Dome, I want to give them Girls and go, oh, this is that, but good.
the interesting thing I found about Alex and Ada, that it started being just about a guy he's given, you know, a Japanese sex robot for the
connection point most people
have. Yeah, for most people have. Yeah. And where at first he's like, I'm not really into this, I'm going to send it back. Well, it's not really an it. Okay, I'm going to keep her. And then,
I mean,
and
you're right when you said about comparing it to her and that idea of like what is sentience.
Yes, exactly. Question,
what is, and because it looks human or it acts human in the case of her, because it resembles humanity, what is defined as that?
Yes. And it seems like it's going to be like, okay, how am I going to have this and then still deal with my friends? But then it becomes like, okay, she just does whatever I like because she's programmed. I'd actually like to have a real relationship. And yeah, how do I jailbreak her and the consequences of that? Like, the longer it goes on, the more these, the whole thing with the consequences come to the forefront.
Well, you discover that, you know, I mean, as it's insinuated, the other of these AIs have been becoming intelligent, some not trying to do anything harmful, but yeah, they're discovered and attacked by a fearful humanity,
right,
and others who did actively commit violent acts. You're like, okay, so clearly something is going on here. Mm-hmm. And as he enters this world, he finds like, yes, there is an underworld, a dark net of like people who are like, yes, we are AI supporters. We see no reason that these things that are literally, they are absolutely sentient, but there's a block in them to keep that from being active to the surface.
There are so many even greater implications in this story that I can't wait for them to explore. And I know it's way off, but the idea that we as humans can, in a godlike way, create sentient life and then fear that sentient life because of the sentience we have given it, because of the free will that we have given it that reflects our own. And there's a lot of social commentary.
Hey, you just described parenting.
There is a lot of social commentary there on a very big scale. But one of the things that I really like about this story, and having read The Girls, and I read The Girls because I got to Alex plus Ada number 5 and was like, I can't wait another month for this. I have to do something. So I got The Girls and one of the themes that carried through both was the similarities between the protagonist in The Girls and Alex. That sort of disconnect between two genders, that sort of awkwardness, that loneliness that is translated into aggression because for various different reasons, because that is how, you know, whether we're taught that way or whether we just don't know how to cope with those feelings. And that seems to be a theme. And this is like, again, if I had the opportunity to interview Lunar Brothers, I would like to really explore this concept and ask them about it, because it is a theme, and it's a really good theme to touch on, because there are so many people who feel that way, who are lonely and disconnected and sad, especially in terms of, you know, love lives and relationship lives, who translate that into aggression and not even that Alex does that, but just how it can be translated into aggression or fear or this outrageous response to break the law, basically, and completely alter your whole life just to escape that feeling, or just to change that feeling, or just in an effort to explore that feeling.
Wow.
I thought a lot about this comic.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry, were you talking?
I love this.
I'm not criticizing. I'm like, you have like totally summed up everything I was thinking and not able to put into words.
I really love this comic. Gets the gears working in my head a lot. And
Martin and I are firing Chris.
You say that every
interested
week.
In maybe stepping in, and you're a little busy.
Someone will say yes eventually. Yeah, and you know, I'll say this. I know some people are flat out not fans of the Luna Brothers art, of Jonathan Luna's art, who just don't like it. And I think that with the type of material that they tend to do, I find his sort of austere, very, like, almost clinically clean look.
It's almost a Trojan horse, because like you mentioned, they do a lot of, their style is evocative of a lot of adult themed comics that you know are very sexy, and like you said, they kind of raise that expectation level. They're like, oh well, when I turn this page, everybody's going to be fucking, right? Nope, no, they're not. They're actually going to be furthering the story right along.
The naked girls are killing everybody.
Yes,
there's and you know what's funny is that I picked up The Girls years ago and put it down because I wasn't into the art. And it's so funny because there have been other books that I felt this way. I read it first, and I'm like, oh, I hate the art. I can't do this. And I just drop it. And then I come back to it years later and I'm like, oh my God, what was I thinking? And you know, the girls, the artwork is really good in the girls, but I didn't appreciate the artwork in the girls until I read Alex plus Ada, because the tone of Alex plus Ada, like just the moment when he pulls her out of the box, how crisp and clean and sterile everything is.
It's the sterility of it that is the Luna
Brothers artwork
style.
Lends itself so well to this particular story that if you're not into the Luna Brothers artwork, I recommend reading this story and then going back and trying to read The Sword, or then going back and trying to read The Girls and see if you feel differently about the artwork.
Yeah. I want them to do like a story that takes place in the Logan's Run the science part of Logan's Run universe.
Yeah.
Like, or something like that, where it's like that, like, so clean, something is missing type of thing.
Yeah.
It's what
the, it feels the like dystopian the, utopia.
Yeah, it feels like all their stuff has that kind of, like I said, almost too clean, and then the material
there's a, itself yeah,
where it's
we
it
we
doesn't
we've,
feel appropriate to it.
We've designed a world the that's very, you know, it's kind of clockworky, you know, and describing this to an artist, we would be like, you know, it's like a very beautiful European town, but as if Walt Disney had come in and made it. Yeah. And so there's just something wrong.
Yeah.
Because it's like, it's not there. Something's a little too scrubbed. Somebody came in and, like, you know, every angle is square, everything is flesh, everything is plumb, and it's like, this isn't how human beings fucking are. So it's off-putting.
Yeah,
I like, one of the things that I like about the art is that it's so crisp and clean that when they go in and try to draw, and they go in and they draw small details, and the small details really pop. Like, there are a lot of scenes where things are, things that, especially when Alex is out in the world separate from Ada, and just going through the day-to-day steps of his life, you'll notice that, like, the Luna Brothers are so, they don't overuse their lines. They don't overuse any line. If it's there, it's supposed
it's
to
very
be
much
there.
An economy
and
of lines.
And you'll notice that, like, he'll draw Alex with circles under his eyes, or like with just a little line under the eye that shows that he's tired,
right,
that he's weary, and that stands out and it pops, because that's not, there's never a line out of place.
Yeah,
you know?
No, that's why I've always loved
it gives those nuances impact.
Jaime Hernandez,
yeah, I was gonna say,
has got that just like ultra clean, almost Archie Comics style, and yeah, it's like, but with that he can take one line and you're like, oh wow, Maggie's put on some weight. And it's so effective in making the characters real.
Yeah.
Now, the last book we're going to take a look at this week is, at least this in depth, is Sheltered. Now, I admittedly don't know anything
about
this.
Yeah, I hadn't heard
book.
Of this.
So this one is all you to sell. Sell it to us.
Sheltered is kind of like, I feel like Sheltered was sort of one of the things that was one of the great things that may have, and oh my god, I swear, I'm pretty sure that maybe the author and the artist might come to my house and kill me for saying this, but I feel like it's one of those things that was born out of the Battle Royale, Hunger Games, the Lord of the Flies, and it really starts with Lord of the Flies. It all starts with Lord of the Flies. Like, we have an obsession with something like taking children, the pinnacle of innocence in our society, and turning them against each other. Well, you know, it's about this small community of people who believe that the end of the world is coming, and so they're stocking up, they're preparing, and the kids all get together under the leadership of this one child, and they form a coup and they take out all the adults. And then it's just these kids in this compound trying to politically
function.
Didn't
we do a reality show that was very much this?
Yeah, but it's so good. It's like, and it's almost like the real not superhero. I'm really into like the Avengers arena stuff, and part of it is like an addiction. Part of it is like, crack, I want to see these children hurt each other. But Sheltered gets a lot deeper into that. It goes
you mean it,
it, goes
it, it explores it beyond anything other than like, man, it'd be cool if these two guys would fight each other.
Well, it's like, yeah, it goes beyond the let's just watch children slice each other up, and let's really deal with the motivation behind, not just because a lot of the stories do deal with the emotional repercussions of the things these children are forced to do, or talked into or convinced to do to each other, but what I like about Sheltered isn't necessarily just that it does that, but it really goes more into how they were convinced in the first place and how they justified it and the way that the minds of children work and, you know, keeping the outside world out. And so, and I really enjoyed Sheltered. Sheltered has been...
That's Image, right?
A really good book, yes.
Of course. Yeah. Oh, well, of course.
Of course, it's awesome. It's Image.
Shocker.
I know, right? It's funny. People ask me all the time. People, you know, I call them Mondays, people who aren't really... Mondays. Oh, I work at a hotel, so I get a lot of Mondays.
In my world, we called them pink boys back in the day from the
Church of the Dobbs Subgenius.
Yeah. Church of the Subgenius.
Which, let's be clear, a Monday is just a geek waiting to be converted, in my opinion. But... either way, you know, I get a lot of Mundy questions about, you know, well, are you into Marvel or DC? And I'm like, well, Image is completely changing that platform.
Yeah,
it's true.
It's not going to be a top two anymore. It's going to be a top three.
And IDW is kind of closing in on them, too, I think.
Boom Studios is putting out some pretty legit stuff, too.
When they announced they were doing a Big Trouble in Little China book that takes place right after the end of the movie, I was like, you take my money.
Well, it's kind of the thing, there was the 90s boom, and the people that managed to stick around have figured out their survival, echelon, how to put themselves into this new market, and there you get Image, which is the, you know, very much still working the creator owned bit, but also like, you know, think outside the box, go out there. You got a wild idea, come to us, we'll fucking set it up for you. We're here for you. And then you have IDW that's just like, hey, you got a licensed property? We'll fucking do that.
Right.
Although that could be said of Dynamite.
That could be said of Dynamite. And Boom, to some extent. But there, you know, you definitely have this like third market stuff that's outside the big two.
Well, it's funny how Image is a complete opposite of what they were in the 90s.
Yeah. I was going to say, do you remember when we were all excited when they started? And you're like, oh, my God, this is finally...
And then we realized that Spawn sucks.
Yeah, we're like, all these books are awful.
Yeah. It's so funny, too, because Image, the new books, are like, on the forefront of, like, comics are for everyone.
Yes. Yeah.
And, you know, and then you turn around and you have comments from Todd McFarlane where he's still like, I'm a gatekeeper! And it's so weird how Image has evolved
Kirkman,
that way.
Like, Robert Kirkman now kind of the official creative content director for them, though?
That I don't know.
I thought that he had accepted that position
think they've got any officer like that. I definitely think there's a process of, like, you know, pitching, but, you know, who knows what goes into that.
Although the one guy from the old guard who never left is Eric Larson.
Yeah, Eric Larson's still there. And Eric Larson always had the best of the
year. Eric Larson does
Savage Dragon.
Yeah, okay. So no. Okay, so I want to go back to Boom Studios real quick. Is anybody reading Midas Flesh?
No, but I hear it's great.
It's amazing. It's incredible. Oh, really? It's so good. And I can't believe I didn't put it on the list, but we talked about Boom Studios. And I was like, oh, duh, Midas Flesh. It's one of my favorites just because of, like, basically the concept is that, you know, Midas actually existed. And in the moment that he wished to be turned into gold, he turned all of, which is actually what would happen scientifically, he turned all of the air particle, like everything he touched. So the whole world turned into gold. So, you know,
so then it became the least valuable thing in the world.
Yeah, right. So there are these, you know, so years and years and years and years later, there are these, you know, people and, you know, I guess dinosaur type aliens in space, and they are there is like sort of a Galactic Federation type situation happening, and they are trying to get a hold of the Midas flesh, because if they get a hold of just a little bit of Midas's flesh, they have the ultimate power weapon. And then, you know, there's this small team of weaponized alchemy, let's weaponize it, anything that we touch, you shoot it into a planet and they're fucked. And that in itself, the first part is fascinating. You know, let's turn this, it's like, if you could turn everything into money, then at what point does money become a weapon?
Let's be honest,
the whole book is really good.
You had me at Dinosaur Alien Space Federation. I was pretty much fucking in.
I was just like, my spirit slipped out of my body a little bit left. I was thinking Velociraptors playing cards in space.
He looks like a Velociraptor in glasses. He's a very astute individual.
In glasses? Oh. Okay.
He's a very astute individual.
Sold American.
He wears a tie.
You
he wears
had me
a tie.
Sleestacks.
He's not actually a Velociraptor. He's just sort of got the shape.
Is it a bow tie?
It's not a bow tie. He's not the doctor.
That would be
Sometimes awesome. Oracle. He's not the Doctor. He might meet the Doctor. I don't know about any future crossovers. I don't think Boom Studios does it.
Oh my god, they should do a mashup of everything, but they're dinosaur velociraptors.
Okay, IDW, Boom Studios, you guys need to get together. Midas Flesh and the Doctor, it needs to happen.
You know, if you want to revitalize the Jurassic Park series, just make the Doctor appear in the first 20 minutes and go, Doctor, there's dinosaurs running around everywhere. What are we going to do? Leave?
Doctor!
Look, I've looked at the timeline. Only these people die. Let's go.
I've actually been, like, stress-watching Doctor Who. Like, at the end of the day, I'm like, I need to unwind. I'm going to rewatch Doctor Who.
They're doing a Star Trek Planet of the Apes mashup. Which is, now I need...
Have you heard what it's called?
I need Planet...
The Primate Directive.
I want to see them take these mashups.
Now you know how my mind works,
These mashups and sort of create, like, Brangelina-type nicknames for them, right? And title the comic that.
Come on. Planet of the Apes and Jurassic World. It's just, come on. It's waiting to happen.
Yeah.
Do not disagree. Well, you know what? It is time to wrap up this episode, but real quick before we do that, just throw up like a laundry list of the other stuff you say that people should really be reading right now.
Oh, gosh. Sex Criminals Saga is really good. Hawkeye is absolutely amazing. I'm really into... X-Men. Oh my god, I'm on the spot. Revival. It's so good. Let's see.
Which X-Men?
I'm reading all of the X-Men.
No one can do that.
No, as much X-Men as I can get my hands on. And
you have a dimensional portal.
A lot of it is actually just like, I call X-Men my stories. Yeah. Like, I have to have
I've always
stories.
Compared them to
yeah.
so
yeah, yeah, like everybody yeah. shut up, I'm reading my stories. Like, I will yell at you, I will throw things at you. Like, it's just, some of it, I don't necessarily agree with every decision in the world that Bendis is making.
I hear that Elizabeth Taylor is going to be performing the marriage between Jean Grey and Wolverine right before he dies. So.
Right before he dies. But young Jean Grey.
I get it.
That's nothing weird. Yeah, that whole interaction is really weird. But there's a lot of cool things happening with X-Men all the time. Because I just love all the characters. I mean, I'd watch them butter toast for, you know, 8 panels. But...
I believe that was Ratner's idea for the fourth movie. Because everyone was dead.
Yes,
it was Ratner's character came
as
up
As long as
name.
It wasn't Halle Berry.
He was just named Buttertoast.
Ms. Marvel.
Do you know what happens to a toad when it attempts the Buttertoast?
Jeez.
Same.
You get Buttertoast.
It gets all of its one-liners taken away from it for the next 2 movies. That's what happens to it. Thank God. The Ms. Marvel is really great.
It's really great.
Really great. I can't recommend that highly enough.
They're huge hands.
They're doing what's going on with like She-Hulk and Hawkeye. They're doing
She-Hulk's
this thing
another
of, like,
one.
Telling these character stories. These that have always been sort of like secondary characters in the Marvel Universe, they're doing it like these people have regular lives and regular friends too.
Marvel now is the ultimate tits. It is the best fucking thing that's happened to Marvel in a long time.
Yeah.
It really is, and I think they're doing a good job. Now, I mean, it's been 2 years, let's reboot again, that's kind of a pain in the ass.
They're not throwing huge crossovers in my face every time I like pick up a fucking comic book.
Not every time.
Not
but
every
they
time.
They can still pump the brakes on the crossovers. That's really
I wish they would, but they're better than they were.
Who's doing the big multiple universes all crossing together thing that's coming up where all the universes are colliding?
Probably DC.
Another Infinite Earth thing. Yeah. But it's like where every single variation on every character is now in the same universe and dealing with each other.
I keep
reading about Grant Morrison is in charge
of it.
Oh my god, are you serious?
I don't know.
I don't mind crossovers so much. It's, I guess my thing, my thing with crossovers is that, like, in the time that you spend working on a crossover, you could be devoting that time to developing a new character. You know, and there are so many new characters that have... You know, there's so many characters, or not even new characters, but just, like, even characters that have been around forever
just
that
a good
don't...
take
yeah,
on an
a
old
good,
character.
Original, fresh, new take on an old character. That's why I really dig Storm, Cyclops, both really excellent titles. People, you know, characters who haven't had their own standalone title in a while. They have before, but in a while, and then giving it a fresh voice.
This is, like, probably about 5 or 6 years old at this point, but the Omega miniseries they did a couple of years ago was just fucking awesome.
Oh, I've never read that.
Oh, so good.
I love it when they pull the characters out of obscurity to be important.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, I'm still waiting for somebody to figure out a good Defenders formula, because I love old 70s era Defenders.
So you know, Marvel is doing a really good job at this, but DC needs some help pulling out some of their little characters. Come on, can you give me a legitimate reason why Booster Gold doesn't have a hilarious comic written by really tongue-in-cheek writer?
Yeah.
There's no justifiable reason why there is not a Booster Gold comic right now.
The fact that they took, you know, like Jeff Johns tweeted about, you know, how much he loves the Justice Society just like a couple of months ago, and I was responding back like, then why don't you fucking bring them back? What's wrong with you?
His run on JSA was one of my favorite super team runs in the last 20 years.
I adore the JSA, like from the Golden Age stuff, like, you know, to the Roy Thomas stuff in the 70s, all of Jeff Jones
right
stuff.
Before they threw everything awesome about it out the window, they made Black Adam one of the best characters.
Oh, they sure did.
So good.
He became my favorite character.
Black Adam and Isis. I mean, come on, man.
There were a lot of. I really liked what Jimmy Palmiotti and Amanda Connor did with Power Girl.
Oh yeah.
And I feel like that was a couple years ahead of its time, and only by a couple years. But I feel like if they had waited a couple years and then launched that series after the New 52, it would have done a lot better.
Man, in an alternate universe from this one, instead of people talking about Katie Sackhoff playing Captain Marvel, they're talking about her playing Power Girl. She could do either one. Oh, I'm just putting that out there, kids.
I would love her as Power Girl. I really loved that they came at that whole, you know, they came at that whole character from a, like, yeah, okay, we get it. She was created for men, but we're going to take the power on that now. Yeah.
Right.
It's our turn.
I feel like I saw something that somebody wrote in one of her books where she finally answered what the boob window was all about. She's like, honestly, I fight a lot of men villains.
Yeah.
And it has a way of throwing them off their game.
Yeah.
When I'm fighting for the survival of people, I don't mind taking advantage of the situation.
Well, there was like a moment where this like 15-year-old boy is staring at her with his jaw like just down around the middle of his chest. She just picks up his jaw, and it's just like, I feel like Power Girl fans everywhere have been waiting years for that
I just saw the other day where it was her and Captain, what's his name from the Watchmen, the blue guy, what's his name?
Dr. Manhattan.
Captain and Dr. Manhattan, and he's going, hey, eyes up here.
The largest dog Vietnam has ever seen.
I thought that was pretty goddamn funny.
Yeah, there's... And I feel like there's a lot of characters that DC has that they could do that kind of fresh approach with. So...
Oh, God. Yeah, they just, you know, I got into a little tussle online just the other day of like, everybody in DC needs to go see Guardians of the Galaxy, because this is a movie that, first and foremost, is fucking fun. And DC's so good at that when they let themselves do that.
In the comics.
It's so fucking good.
Somebody convinced everybody at DC after the Dark Knight films, we have to make everything dark and brooding and serious.
No, yes. Scott Snyder can be dark and brooding and serious, and the rest of you need to get a fucking sense of
humor. Exactly. The guy whose parents got shot in front of him is a little grim sometimes.
If you can't do it as well as Scott Snyder, then maybe it's not your bag and you need to move on.
Exactly.
I just read his whole run on Court of Owls, like the whole thing all the way through, and I'm like, wow, this is the best thing to happen to Batman in years.
Oh, yeah, like... I think Scott Snyder and Batman should have like a wedding. I want to see photo shoots of him like in a Batman comic. He never stops writing Batman. I'll be like, okay, the series should just be canceled.
Let's make it happen on the new Yahoo streaming episodes of Community.
It's right. Like, yeah.
Happen. Anyway, we've got to wrap this thing up. Thank you so much, Dani Danger, for joining us. We want to remind you guys again to go and check her out at weird-girls.com, where she's got lots of videos up. You can see her interviewing all sorts of various luminaries in the comic industry, and just your, you know, man on the street stuff as well.
Yeah,
reviewing various books that are coming out. You do a weekly poll, even.
I do a weekly poll list video, and then we usually put out a second video that can be like a review, social commentary, product reviews, whatever list I want to make.
Best Sonic screwdriver ever.
I can make a Sonic screwdriver, but that's a drink. I make alcoholic drinks as well.
Wow. I'll take too.
That. Yeah, I was going to say.
Nerdy drinks.
As well, you are going to be having a cosplay photo op with Steam Team Justice at Wizard World in October.
Yeah.
Where you're going to be that steampunk hot girl.
I will be steampunk hot girl. So if you see me roaming around, there will be a steampunk Zatanna. We got a steampunk Green Lantern. It will be a lot of fun. We love taking pictures. Seriously, we need your validation. Come and see us.
Well, thank you so much for coming out here.
Yeah, for real.
Thank
really.
You on this for months. So I'm so sorry it's taken so long.
Oh, you obviously are busy.
Yeah, you got a lot going on.
The week.
Yeah, I mean, you got. I was like, damn, she didn't want anything to do with this, and she's like, no, I just was busy getting nominated for all, most awesome geeks.
Awards you will never win.
Awards that no one would. It would not occur to anyone to nominate me for. But thank
I
you
sleep
so
like
much,
Batman. I don't.
Well, you know, we all need a Robin.
Okay.
Thank you, and Bo, for... I'm sorry that it was your birthday, and I totally missed
that,
it.
No, that's cool. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, and thank you, Martin, for climbing out of the coffin yet again to join us. We'll be back in really 2 weeks this time.
We'll see.
No. Martin.
Oh, God, is it Batman wearing the wedding dress, or is it Snyder?
Ugh. God, it's got to be Batman, please.
This is gonna, now I have to get up early, Bo. Thanks a lot. I'm gonna be thinking about this all night.